Chapter 58. Finished their tea and coffee, they followed to the shore, where they sat for nearly an hour, reading and watching the bathers. At length footsteps crunched among the pebbles in their vicinity, and looking out from her sunshade, Paula saw the two Somersets close at hand. The elder recognized her, and the younger, observing his father's action of courtesy, turned his head. It was a revelation to Paula, for she was shocked to see that he appeared worn and ill. The expression of his face changed at sight of her, increasing its shade of paleness, but he immediately withdrew his eyes and passed by. Somerset was as much surprised at encountering her thus as she had been distressed to see him. As soon as they were out of hearing, he asked his father quietly, "What strange thing is this, that Lady Distancy should be here and her husband not with her? Did she bow to me, or to you?" Apostrophe, Lady Distancy, that young lady? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked the puzzled painter. He proceeded to explain all he knew, that she was a young lady he had met on his journey a two or three different times. Moreover, that if she were his son's client, the woman who was to have become Lady Distancy, she was Miss Power still, for he had seen in some newspaper 2 days before leaving England that the wedding had been postponed on account of her illness. Somerset was so greatly moved that he could hardly speak connectedly to his father as they paced on together. "But she is not ill, as far as I can see," apostrophe he said. "The wedding postponed? You are sure the word was postponed? Was it broken off?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, "No, it was postponed. I meant to have told you before, knowing you would be interested as the castle architect, but it slipped my memory in the bustle of arriving. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I am not the castle architect." Apostrophe, apostrophe, "The devil you are not, what are you then?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, "Well, I am not that." Apostrophe, apostrophe, Somerset the elder, though not of penetrating nature, began to see that here lay an emotional complication of some sort, and reserved further inquiry till a more convenient occasion. They had reached the end of the level beach, where the cliff began to rise, and as this impediment naturally stopped their walk, they retraced their steps. On again nearing the spot where Paula and her aunt were sitting, the painter would have deviated to the hotel, but as his son persisted in going straight on, in due course they were opposite the ladies again. By this time Miss Power, who had appeared anxious during their absence, regained her self-control. Going towards her old lover, she said, with a smile, "I have been looking for you." Apostrophe, apostrophe, "Why have you been doing that?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Somerset, in a voice which he failed to keep as steady as he could wish. "Because I want some architect to continue the restoration." "Do you withdraw your resignation?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, Somerset appeared unable to decide for a few instants. "Yes," apostrophe, he then answered. For the moment they had ignored the presence of the painter and Mrs. Goodman, but Somerset now made them known to one another, and there was friendly intercourse all round. "When will you be able to resume operations at the castle?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, she asked, as soon as she could again speak directly to Somerset. "As soon as I can get back. Of course I only resume it at your special request." Apostrophe, apostrophe, "Of course." Apostrophe, apostrophe, to one who had known all the circumstances, it would have seemed a thousand pities that, after again getting face to face with him, she did not explain, without delay, the whole mischief that had separated them. But she did not do it perhaps from the inherent awkwardness of such a topic at this idle time. She confined herself simply to the above-mentioned business-like request, and when the party had walked a few steps together they separated, with mutual promises to meet again. "I hope you have explained your mistake to him, and how it arose, and everything?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, said her aunt when they were alone. "No, I did not." Apostrophe, apostrophe, "What, not explain after all?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, said her amazed relative. "I decided to put it off." Apostrophe, apostrophe, "Then I think you decided very wrongly. Poor young man, he looked so ill. Apostrophe apostrophe, did you two think he looked ill? But he danced last night. Why did he dance? Apostrophe apostrophe, she turned and gazed regretfully at the corner round which the Somersets had disappeared. I don't know why he danced, but if I had known you were going to be so silent, I would have explained the mistake myself. Apostrophe apostrophe, I wish you had. But no, I have said I would, and I must. Apostrophe, Paula's avoidance of tables d'hôte did not extend to the present one. It was quite with alacrity that she went down, and with her entry the antecedent hotel beauty who had reigned for the last 5 days at that meal was unceremoniously deposed by the guests. Mr. Somerset the elder came in, but nobody with him. His seat was on Paula's left hand, Mrs. Goodman being on Paula's right, so that all the conversation was between the academician and the younger lady. When the latter had again retired upstairs with her aunt, Mrs. Goodman expressed regret that young Mr. Somerset was absent from the table. Why has he kept away? Apostrophe, she asked. I don't know, I didn't ask, apostrophe, said Paula sadly. Perhaps he doesn't care to meet us again. Apostrophe apostrophe, that's because you didn't explain. Apostrophe apostrophe, well, why didn't the old man give me an opportunity? Apostrophe apostrophe, exclaimed the niece with suppressed excitement. He would scarcely say anything but yes and no, and gave me no chance at all of introducing the subject. I wanted to explain I came all the way on purpose. I would have begged George's pardon on my two knees if there had been any way of beginning. But there was not, and I could not do it. Apostrophe apostrophe, though she slept badly that night, Paula promptly appeared in the public room to breakfast, and that not from motives of vanity, for, while not unconscious of her accession to the unstable throne of Queen Beauty in the establishment, she seemed too preoccupied to care for the honor just then, and would readily have changed places with her unhappy predecessor, who lingered on in the background like a candle after sunrise. Mrs. Goodman was determined to trust no longer to Paula for putting an end to what made her so restless and self-reproachful. Seeing old Mr. Somerset enter to a little side table behind for lack of room at the crowded center tables, again without his son, she turned her head and asked point blank where the young man was. Mr. Somerset's face became a shade graver than before. My son is unwell, apostrophe, he replied. So unwell that he has been advised to stay indoors and take perfect rest. Apostrophe apostrophe, I do hope it is nothing serious. Apostrophe apostrophe, I hope so too. The fact is, he has overdone himself a little. He was not well when he came here, and to make himself worse he must needs go dancing at the casino with this lady, and that among others with a young American lady who is here with her family, and whom he met in London last year. I advised him against it, but he seemed desperately determined to shake off lethargy by any rash means, and wouldn't listen to me. Luckily he is not in the hotel, but in a quiet cottage 100 yards up the hill. Apostrophe apostrophe, Paula, who had heard all, did not show or say what she felt at the news. But after breakfast, on meeting the landlady in the passage alone, she asked with some anxiety if there were a really skillful medical man in Etretat, and on being told that there was, and his name, she went back to look for Mr. Somerset. But he had gone. They heard nothing more of young Somerset all that morning, but towards evening, while Paula sat at her window, looking over the heads of fuchsias upon the promenade beyond, she saw the painter walk by. She immediately went to her aunt, and begged her to go out, and ask Mr. Somerset if his son had improved. I will send Millie or Clementon, apostrophe, said Mrs. Goodman. I wish you would see him yourself. Apostrophe apostrophe, he has gone on. I shall never find him. Apostrophe, he has only gone round to the front, apostrophe, persisted Paula. Do walk that way, auntie, and ask him. Apostrophe apostrophe, thus pressed, Mrs. Goodman acquiesced, and brought back intelligence to Miss Power, who had watched them through the window, that his son did not positively improve, but that his American friends were very kind to him. Having made news of her aunt, Paula seemed particularly anxious to get rid of her again, and when that lady sat down to write letters, Paula went to her own room, hastily dressed herself without assistance, asked privately the way to the cottage, and went off thitherward unobserved. At the upper end of the lane she saw a little house answering to the description, whose front garden, windowsills, palings, and doorstep were literally ablaze with nasturtiums in bloom. She entered this inhabited nosegay, quietly asked for the invalid, and if he were well enough to see Miss Power. The woman of the house soon returned, and she was conducted up a crooked staircase to Somerset's modest apartments. It appeared that some rooms in this dwelling had been furnished by the landlady of the inn, who hired them of the tenant during the summer season, to use as an annex to the hotel. Admitted to the outer room, she beheld her architect looking as unarchitectural as possible, lying on a small couch which was drawn up to the open casement, whence he had a back view of the window flowers, and enjoyed a green transparency through the undersides of the same nasturtium leaves that presented their faces to the passers without. When the latch had again clicked into the catch of the closed door, Paula went up to the invalid, upon whose pale and interesting face a flush had arisen simultaneously with the announcement of her name. He would have sprung up to receive her, but she pressed him down, and throwing all reserve on one side for the first time in their intercourse, she crouched beside the sofa, whispering with roguish solicitude, her face not too far from his own. "How foolish you are, George, to get ill just now, when I have been wanting so much to see you again. I am so sorry to see you like this. What I said to you when we met on the shore was not what I had come to say." Somerset took her by the hand. "Then what did you come to say, Paula?" he asked. "I wanted to tell you that the mere wanton wandering of a capricious mind was not the cause of my estrangement from you. There has been a great deception practiced. The exact nature of it, I cannot tell you plainly just at present. It is too painful, but it is all over, and I can assure you of my sorrow at having behaved as I did, and of my sincere friendship now as ever. There is nothing I shall value so much as that. It will make my work at the castle very pleasant to feel that I can consult you about it without fear of intruding on you against your wishes. Yes, perhaps it will. But you do not comprehend me. You have been an enigma always. And you have been provoking, but never so provoking as now. I wouldn't for the world tell you the whole of my fancies as I came hither this evening. But I should think your natural intuition would suggest what they were. It does, Paula. But there are motives of delicacy which prevent my acting on what is suggested to me. Delicacy is a gift, and you should thank God for it. But in some cases it is not so precious as we would persuade ourselves. Not when the woman is rich, and the man is poor? Oh, George Somerset, be cold, or angry, or anything, but don't be like this. It is never worth a woman's while to show regret for her injustice, for all she gets by it is an accusation of want of delicacy. Indeed I don't accuse you of that. I warmly, tenderly thank you for your kindness in coming here to see me. Well, perhaps you do. But I am now in I cannot tell what mood. I will not tell what mood, for it would be confessing more than I ought. This finding you out is a piece of weakness that I shall not repeat, and I have only one thing more to say. I have served you badly, George, I know that, but it is never too late to mend, and I have come back to you. However, I shall never run after you again, trust me for that, for it is not the woman's part. Still, before I go, that there may be no mistake as to my meaning and misery entailed on us for want of a word, I'll add this, that if you want to marry me, as you once did, you must say so. Therefore I am here to be asked. Apostrophe apostrophe, it would be superfluous to transcribe Somerset's reply, and the remainder of the scene between the pair. Let it suffice that half an hour afterwards, when the sun had almost gone down, Paula walked briskly into the hotel, troubled herself nothing about dinner, but went upstairs to their sitting room, where her aunt presently found her upon the couch looking up at the ceiling through her fingers. They talked on different subjects for some time till the old lady said apostrophe Mr. Somerset's cottage is the one covered with flowers up the lane, I hear. Apostrophe apostrophe, yes, apostrophe said Paula. How do you know? Apostrophe apostrophe, I've been there. Dot dot dot, we are going to be married, and apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.